Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Mayor, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th day of April, Anno Domini 2025, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. But wait, before we get to the news, we should acknowledge that Mr. Dennis Worcester has abandoned his family and given up some of his Saturday to come and join us on, on Soundbites.
Right. It's true.
And happy we appreciate that.
Yep.
He is here to share his expertise, his knowledge,
and crack-wise
and his humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. With us, Steve Ray, of course, one step ahead of the law somewhere
still
among the mesas and arroyos of the Southwest.
That's right.
Probably hiding with the hole in the head gang somewhere in there. But
he was laying on his blanket looking up at the Milky Way last night, and he woke up early to watch the sunrise this morning, I'm sure.
I will tell you, when
sitting
you are
on the bumper
out there
of his car,
where there's no light pollution,
the
stars are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And the sunrises, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And the sunsets.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's amazing. Oh, and okay, so we're at a pledge drive. So I will be dunning you fiercely throughout the show to make a payment to become a member of this station. When you call, you will speak to the lovely and talented Cheryl.
It's true. I saw her.
If you want to make a pledge, the best way to do it, of course, is online. Jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button. Fill in the form. 2 minutes, you're done. Or you can call Cheryl. She will fill out the form, and you're done. And if you have a question, Cheryl will pass you on to us.
Right.
Now, what we often see when we are doing a pledge drive is that the calls drop off.
Oh, drastically.
Mainly because I think people are ashamed to have Cheryl answer the phone and say, do you want to make a pledge? And they have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be ashamed.
No.
In these parlous economic times,
yeah,
no is an acceptable answer. Not a good answer for us, but an acceptable answer.
Yeah.
So don't worry about that point. No judgment. We are a no judgment zone. All right. So first item. We've been talking for a while about the death of Windows 10 and how dangerous it will be to keep running it, even if your old hardware doesn't support Windows 11. Well, Microsoft is making a surprise shift in its approach to Windows 11, and it's one that's being welcomed by many users. The latest update finally opens the door to installing Windows 11 on older PCs, which had previously been excluded due to the operating system's strict hardware requirements. This move is a big deal for the estimated 500 to 800 million users who have been hanging onto Windows 10 on older yet reliable machines, as it gives them the opportunity to upgrade and enjoy the new system without needing to replace their hardware. The updated policy means that older processors, once deemed too outdated, are now eligible to run Windows 11. Maybe not your 15-year-old laptop.
Yeah. Running the old Windows 3.1.
Right. But some
maybe
older
not your
machine.
Pentium 3, yeah.
Well, Microsoft is still focused on security, and rightly so. This decision acknowledges that many people aren't ready to part with their current PCs, and shouldn't have to. The decision to allow more PCs to run Windows 11 isn't just about broadening access. It's also about cybersecurity. As Windows 10 approaches its end of life, users will be soon exposed to unpatched security vulnerabilities if they continue using the outdated system. By enabling more devices to upgrade, Microsoft is ensuring that a larger number of users benefit from the latest security updates and features. That said, it's still a good idea to double-check whether your device is truly ready for the upgrade. While Microsoft has eased the hardware demands, older machines might still struggle with performance or lack compatibility with some of the more advanced features. So, before hitting that upgrade button, it's worth taking a moment to review your system specs. A system with a slow processor or too little memory may run Windows 11, but it'll be a frustrating experience.
Mm-hmm.
So our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Windows 11 can now install on older PCs. And your choices are, hallelujah, guess it's time to upgrade. That's a hard pass for me. And you still run Windows? How quaint. So far, we have 29 votes in the poll. And you still run Windows? How quaint is comfortably in the lead. And, of course, you can vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And once you have done that, then you can give us a call, hopefully to make a pledge, but also to talk to us about stuff at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Before we get to the phones, I know we have a call waiting. Before we get to the phones, I think that this ability to upgrade older machines is good, but I think it's going to lead to a massive amount of frustration and calls to every support group on the planet, including us.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't my machine run Windows 11 well?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your processor? I have an i3 with 2 gigs of RAM.
There's your problem.
Okay. Where do we start?
Yeah, really.
You want a minimum of 4 gigs of RAM, and I'll be honest, 8 gigs is preferable. A minimum of 4 gigs of RAM. You want an i5. An i3 is, you can, like I said, you can run Windows on a lower processor with less memory. But response time is measured with a calendar.
You won't want. You can do it. It doesn't mean you should.
Right.
Frustration level
you won't
will
like it.
Like double.
Right. So you want at least an i5. You want at least a 4 gigs of RAM, and 8 is better. You want a bunch of disk space because the upgrade will take a lot of disk space until it's done. So if you're running a small hard drive at 60, 70, 80%, you can't do the upgrade. It will fail.
It'll throw a message saying...
It'll throw a message.
Not enough space to continue.
So you need to finally empty your trash.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably 20 gig right there.
Yep. Get rid of any old podcast episodes.
Yeah, the old podcast episodes are still up there. You can download them again at any time.
True.
Check your temp folders for stuff you don't need anymore. You can, when you do a listing, you can get a date, a directory, you can get a date.
Yeah.
And that date will tell you this is from 2015. Maybe it's time to erase that mm-hmm. temp file.
Yeah,
might be.
Pay attention to your machine before you upgrade it to make sure that the upgrade is the best possible experience for your machine. And again, if it's lower than an i5 and it's lower than 4 gig of RAM, really don't do it. It's not going to be a pleasurable experience running it day to day. Clear?
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. I think that about covers it.
All right, to the phones. Robin, our first call is Ed from Ithaca, New York. What's up, Ed?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a MacBook Air, early 2015,
okay.
High Sierra 10.13.6. And I want to know if I can upgrade the operating system to either Mojave or Catalina.
One moment. I have an app that tracks this sort of thing for Macs called Mac Tracker. And I am consulting it now. I'm going to the MacBook Air section. Let's see. You said it was early 2015?
Correct.
Okay. 13-inch?
11-inch.
11-inch. Okay. Let me roll back to that. It says original OS came with 10.10.2, later OS, maximum OS. Latest release of Mac OS 12 Monterey is the latest that particular machine will run.
Okay. And how do I get to it? Because when I try to update it, it won't.
Support.apple.com has links to older versions of the Mac OS. I don't know if they go back to Monterey or not. Let me take a quick look.
What version are you running now?
High Sierra.
Okay.
And just going in and doing the upgrade doesn't work.
Correct.
Download. Well, it's possible if it's old enough that they may have pulled that image, like they don't want to support that anymore. Let me double check. Monterey, and now do...
That is 10 years.
My favorite Google trick is to do site colon...
Yes.
...apple.com, and that tells Google, only give Dennis back results that come from apple.com. And when I do that, it says... If I go to the how to download and install macOS page... And Nick, we'll put this on the link. I see Sequoia, Ventura, Monterey, Big Sur, Catalina, Mojave, High Sierra. But do I see Monterey? Yes, Monterey is right there. And then that link takes you to the App Store. Okay, I have a solution.
Okay.
And it involves going to support.apple.com and looking for an article titled How to Download and Install Mac OS.
Okay.
And I will hand this link off to Nick, and Nick will put it on our website so that you can visit it. How soon do those go up, Nick? Do those go up?
Instantly.
Instantly? Okay. So you should see that in the next few minutes. And then that'll give you a link that'll take you over to the Mac App Store where you can download the installer.
Okay, great. By the way, I tried to download LibreOffice through the App Store, and it said it was $8.99. Which is very odd. I ended up going directly to OpenOffice and downloading an older version for free. So it wasn't an issue, but I thought that was strange.
I do see it here. I do see the listing that you're talking about. And I wonder if that's put out by the actual... It's put out by the Document Foundation.
Yeah, that's them.
Okay.
And
so
they're charging
maybe
you $8?
Yeah, $8.99.
$9.
Interesting.
Okay.
Maybe it's a fundraising.
On their website, it says LibreOffice is a private, free, and open source office suite.
Well, downloading it from the website probably makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what I did. Okay.
They could have been pirated, maybe?
Well, I was thinking maybe it was somebody who grabbed it and repackaged it and put it up, and then Apple didn't notice.
And tried to make some money off it.
Tried to make $9 a pop on it. But, all right.
Yeah, if you
good
go to the LibreOffice website, and I'll put this in there as well.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you did this already. Yeah. If you go to LibreOffice website, one of the choices is Mac OS. Two choices of Mac OS, Apple Silicon or Intel. So that's nice.
All right. I'm sending that link over to your Nick.
Okay. So, and by the way, I am a member.
Thank you so much for being a member.
As well.
Thank you. We love to hear that. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, let me give me a second here. You know what? Before we go to the phones, I'm going to go to Dennis.
Hello? Yes?
I have a MacBook Air 2013.
2013.
What's your name?
Okay.
It has Monterey on it.
Yes.
And it's never going to go anywhere.
Okay.
I think it's time for me to put Linux on it.
Sure, yeah.
North Carolina.
It is an Intel Mac.
Okay.
Hold on, Dan.
And I can do that.
Absolutely, yes.
So I need to do... The problem is I already checked it out. Everything works but Wi-Fi.
Oh.
And they tell me there's a trick. And I've bookmarked the trick.
Okay.
That I will try. If that doesn't work, do you recommend a dongle?
Yeah. I have... Let's see. That one probably from that era has, what, USB-A?
No, C.
C? Or Thunderbolt?
Oh, Thunderbolt. Yeah, it's got Thunderbolt.
There are Thunderbolt docks and Thunderbolt dongles. I'm trying to remember which ones we were. Apple makes a very nice Thunderbolt to Ethernet dongle that is not terribly expensive that will give you just Ethernet. I think there are other dongles that might break it out and give you more than just one option. In that era, people usually had several dongles, one for Ethernet, one for connecting to a VGA projector back then, or some that would kick out to DisplayPort for connecting to a monitor or HDMI. But it was.
I'd rather find a Thunderbird device that just connected, not not a dock.
Okay, so you just need a individual adapter.
I really hope the trick works because the idea is to keep it compact.
Right.
And anytime you have to add a dongle, it's not compact.
It's not the same. But if your OS isn't going to support the wireless chips, then that's unfortunately where we end up.
We'll have to see. All right. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. Before I go to the phones, remember we're in a pledge drive. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl.
Mm-hmm.
That's also the number you call to get through to us with a question.
What's that number again?
585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. I can do that in my sleep. Or, of course, you can go to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and donate now.
And
that's
Cheryl
the idea.
Will be so nice to you.
Cheryl's a sweetheart. She is lovely.
If you want somebody nice to talk to,
it's nobody better than Cheryl.
Yeah.
She's wonderful. So give us a call and make that pledge, make that donation, keep us on the air. We'd love to continue to be on the air, but that's up to you, not up to us.
Right.
And while you make that call, we'll talk to Don from somewhere in North Carolina. Hi, Don. What's up?
Hello. Getting back to your announcement that Microsoft is making Windows 11 available for older computers, that's wonderful. You said minimum requirements, 4 gig, 8 gig better of RAM, i3, i5 is better or above. You mentioned also a much disk space required. And I wrote down 20 gigabytes. Is that correct?
No, that was my example for if you've only got 20 gigabytes, you may not have enough. Because here's what happens. Windows has to download. It's huge.
The installer. For Windows 11.
Right. And then when you get the installer for Windows 11, you've now got two full versions of Windows on your machine. The installer then backs up your installation. Now you've got three versions of the installation on your machine. So you need probably 24, 25 gig.
Yeah, higher end.
Oh.
More is always better.
Yeah. But at least 25 gig. You don't want to squeeze the installer.
Right.
But do you need to keep those versions, the backup, and then the previous version, Windows 10, do you need to keep those on the computer?
They disappear once the installation is done.
Right. So, once you finish the installation, yes, those other components will go away, and you'll see a considerable amount of space that will come back that you were previously using for the installer and for that backup. But they need some working, they need some elbow room to get their job done.
Right, it's like you're living in a locker in high school. You're in the locker. This sings to me. You're in the locker. You can live in that locker. It's fine. But if you tried to change clothes, you need more space.
Right.
Once you've changed clothes, you could go back in the locker. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, it does. Any idea then how much a disk space is ultimately needed for the operation?
I would say about 25 gig.
I'd say more than that,
Okay, yeah.
But that's for the installation, you're saying. Once it's installed and the previous versions are removed, how much disk space is then occupied that you didn't have before you installed Windows 11?
It depends. And that being that how much space was already taken from your previous stuff that was already installed. And I don't know if there's any great tool that measures how much new space the new Windows takes up. And nowadays, I mean, technically it's not an issue because most new computers now come out with a terabyte hard drive. And space is very, nothing to worry about. I mean, especially when you got a terabyte hard drive that you can get for under $100.
Right. It's an inexpensive resource these days.
Okay, so according to Microsoft themselves.
Okay.
Windows 11 requires at least 64 gigabytes of free space for the installation.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So but it's recommended to have more.
Yeah. Like I said, more is always better.
So.
64 gigabytes after the installation is completed?
No, for the installation itself. So before you do the installation, you need 64 gigabytes of free space.
Okay.
After installation, Windows 11 takes about 25 to 35 gig, depending on some of the things you've installed. And then on top of that is all the programs you install.
Right. Okay, well, in terms of a terabyte, that's fine if you're buying a new computer, but can you accomplish the same thing with an older, smaller computer with an auxiliary solid-state drive that's a terabyte or a 500 gig?
No, a Windows installation needs to be on the C drive.
Right, okay. But at least you could use the other drive for certain files and things that you could get off the same
drive. Like I said, move off, you know, empty your trash, empty your temp directory, move off anything you don't need right away. If you've got backups, move off all your documents, all your spreadsheets, all your pictures.
Right. Okay.
And in fact, our recommendation is always to have a good backup of all your data before you do an update.
Oh, for sure.
Right. Okay. But 25 to 35 gig.
Nope, 64 gig. Microsoft says 64 gig minimum. Okay, that's it. We got to take a break. I'm sorry. We are going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We are in a pledge drive, so make that call. Make that pledge. Keep us on the air. Become a member of our family and all the other lovely things I could be saying. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And before we go back to the phones, I want to thank, we had a couple of membership
Callers.
Oh, we love that.
We love that. So I want to thank Greg.
Cool.
And I want to thank Larry. And I want to say, I hadn't closely looked at the forum before. And over the years, we've always had, you know, at a certain level.
Yep.
The hey, nice socks level and the hey, nice shirt level.
Right.
The $365 level is dollar a day level. Well, apparently the $100 level is now, that's bites with a Y level.
Chris.
I love it. At any rate, thank you, Greg. Thank you, Larry. Thank you all the anonymous and faceless masses who've been pledging online. Yeah. We very much appreciate it. I can't tell you how much.
It's keeping us on the air.
It keeps us on the air.
They really enjoy the program and don't want to see us disappear.
Right. And our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
And like I said, I did my bit to keep you there forever if I can. But.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
I called in some time ago about putting a BrightSign network for our church online so that the young person that's taking it over can do it remotely. When I checked my network guy at the church, he said we needed another computer that's always on so that she could go in, establish a connection, and then work remotely from anywhere. We didn't have another one that was already on, so I was wondering if I could take one of my Raspberry Pis and do the same thing, just turn it into an always-on computer.
Why not?
It depends entirely on what software you have to run, right? Because if it is a Windows-specific program, then no. Well, unless you've got a Raspberry Pi 4 or Raspberry Pi 5, which will run Windows. If it's just making a connection through something like remote desktop or whatever, then yes, you absolutely can use a Raspberry Pi to do that.
Okay, I have another Raspberry Pi I was getting ready to put a terabyte drive on it or something. I don't think I need that much,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to use Bright Author Connect. And all it'll need to do is get into the church's network system, and she can work from anywhere. So I do have, I think I've got Linux, what is it, Buster or something like that that's on it now?
Yeah, that's a Debian Buster, yep.
Okay, Debian Buster. And I do have, I think, Google or something like that is on it, too. So I know she can get in it because I can get in it from my Mac or another system. So I was just trying to double check if that would be, because it's going to be on all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not a problem. I don't know the last time I turned off one of my Raspberry Pis.
I haven't in over 2 years of some of my servers, and they're running their Raspberry Pi 3s running ARM version of Windows. And they're running just backup software, and I've got a couple other programs on there that I could run on them too.
The big thing is cooling.
Yeah,
you want to put an active fan on them,
right?
And in fact, there are companies that make giant. Well, for a Raspberry Pi, they're giant.
Yeah,
towers with big fans in them to keep it cool. I don't know where you're going to put it, but that's a consideration. Particularly in the summer when churches are closed during the week and there's no air conditioning on, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So make sure that it has plenty of cooling available.
So I have a couple of active fans, and I have a couple of these towers that have the multicolors and
the very sexy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I kind of got boxes of this stuff, so... I just wanted to know if that would be a good idea. I've got a small screen. That's all you need. Extra mouse, extra keyboard and stuff to be hooked up. But it would just sit there and run.
Right. And in fact, if all you're using it for is for the other person to connect through into the network, you don't even need a keyboard, mouse, or screen.
Yeah, the screen can be turned off. Or I'd keep it on there just in case.
Well, that's true.
You got to do any maintenance. Right. But you can turn off the monitor and just let the box run it as it will, and away you go.
Okay, that's all I needed then. I was working on it, and then I thought, maybe I better ask the experts before I go in. It's not a lot of money anyway, so...
Right. Yeah. No, it should work fine.
Okay. That's all I need to know. Thank you, guys.
Well, then that's all you get. And thank you, Larry. Have fun. Yeah, I actually do have a monitor on my Raspberry Pi 400.
Okay.
And I do have a monitor on the one that's showing me my temperature and everything mm-hmm. else. I set up a little
weather
station. Geek I am.
Sure.
But all my other ones are headless. They don't run a monitor. They don't have a keyboard or a mouse. They just run. And they do backups, and they do other stuff. And
right.
I don't need a keyboard on them because I can remote desktop into them.
Right.
And then they're using my keyboard, mouse, and screen. So it works out pretty well all the way around. The Raspberry Pi should work fine for what he wants to do.
In fact, it's probably optimal for many reasons. One, you could probably put it in whatever audio rack they've likely have at the church already. Or it's very compact. It doesn't use a lot of power. As long as as long as you can keep it cool, it could be a really optimal way to do it because there's just next to no moving parts.
And if they're on a Wi-Fi network, they could put it anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
Anywhere there's a plug.
And it's really designed to be powered on for long periods of time. It's very comfortable doing that.
Right.
But I would stash it away where other hands can't get at it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Put it in, like you say, in the storage room there where the rest of the server, and just set it up on top, and you got even a little fan blowing on it.
Right.
Right.
You know, that'd be ideal with it just sitting there, like you say, with a good fan on it already, and then I'd just put in an additional fan because those rooms can get warm, like you said, especially during the summertime, and just keep it cool. It's happier than a pig in mud.
What I do, and I'm sure Larry is still listening, I would log in every once in a while and check the temperature.
Yeah.
Which you can do.
Yeah.
So, you know, once a month, maybe more often in the summer.
Yep.
And then deal with it if it becomes a problem. But you'll find the best place to put it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wayne from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Wayne. What's up?
Hey, hi, guys. I like your locker analogy.
Thank you.
And by the way, I renewed my membership last week.
Thank you very much.
Very nice.
Thank you.
So my question is very timely. I have a Raspberry Pi question.
There you go.
Looking to get into it, just looking if you have a recommendation for an inexpensive starter kit. Of course, I know you're going to ask me, how am I going to use it? I don't know.
Well, that's the fun of the Raspberry Pi. We have said that over 3 years ago when we really started talking about Raspberry Pis. We were saying how, it's a great Christmas gift back then to pick up and play with, because it was literally a miniature computer that you can do so much with.
Yeah.
There are so many videos out there telling you you could have a Raspberry Pi do this, control your house, do that, do this. It's endless. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, and I figured since I've been doing more with Linux and Python, it would be a good time to dabble in, but I'm wondering... how many gigabytes, if you have a recommended starter kit, how many gigabytes?
Canakit is the place.
Pi-5?
Canakit is the best place to go. They have the best pricing. And
they have Pi 4 kits, Pi 5 kits.
Go with the Pi 4 right now.
Right, right. Okay. Just as a starter thing?
Pi 4.
Pi 4 is going to be enough power. And if you need to swap in a Pi 5 at that point, they have starter kits, so there's, you know, it's got the Pi itself, the power supply, a couple of HDMI cables, a case for it, a starter a booklet, tiny little micro SD card,
right,
to power it up, and that kit will serve you pretty well if you turn around and buy a Pi 5.
Yep, true.
So you might need to buy the Pi 5 and the case, but you've already got all the accoutrements that go around with it. So there's a couple of things on Canakit that I would take a look at if I were you. You can also go directly to Raspberry Pi and see a number of other vendors. I have always bought from Canakit.
Yeah, they're always the best pricing.
And also the best service and support that I have found so far.
Yeah,
amen.
I've been on the Canakit site a number of times. There's many choices. Do you have a favorite? And how many gigabytes is adequate?
Eight.
I would say eight.
Eight gigs of memory
do that. And it depends on what you're doing. There is a Pi 4 starter kit for $100.
Okay.
Okay.
If you want to spend a little more, there's the starter max kit. That's $145. The extreme kit is also $145.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I like the kit.
They look like the same price.
But what I like is the kit that includes, with the power cord, that little switch in between that you can turn it on and off, because I am not a fan of... I want to just unplug
it to turn it off.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
It looks like both the Max and Extreme kits have that.
Yeah. I think that's a nice to have.
And they are the most popular picks on the site. So if you just head on over to canakit.com Com.
Sure.
You know where it is.
Been there many times, but I never decided which one I want. So thank you. This is helpful.
Yeah, like one of those two, one. either the Max or the Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And since I can't tell the difference quickly while we're standing here, oh, I see.
SD card?
Exactly right. The SD card on the Max is 64 gig.
Okay.
And the SD card on the Extreme is 128 gig.
You only need 64.
You really only need 64, but if he wants to play, it's the same price.
Yeah.
Get the other one.
But see, what I always...
I'm not going to do much, and then I dive in deeply.
But see, what I do is on the Raspberry Pi website, you know, the Raspberry Pi formatting software, you can sit there and format it so when the Raspberry Pi boots up, it looks for a hard drive. I've got mine, so it automatically goes to the hard drive, not the SD card, and I just throw on a terabyte hard drive.
Right, and that's something you can do later.
Yep.
Right now, what you want to do is play, so don't get too crazy day one.
Right.
You know, you can always add stuff later. Trust me when I tell you, you
go
will
small,
add stuff later.
And then
later.
You can always upgrade.
Exactly.
This is great advice. Thank you. I thought I would dive in before tariffs put them out of price.
Well, exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is exactly right. Although today he said...
It's an exemption, right?
Right, that computer
and,
parts are exempted.
And cell phones.
And cell phones and something else.
I'll have to look it up.
So computer chips.
Okay.
Computer chips themselves. So theoretically...
Yeah, today.
If there is logic and order in the universe.
that means nothing tomorrow, but...
Yeah.
You're right, order it today.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you much. Have a great day.
You too. Keep smiling. I will tell you, I love my Raspberry Pis. You can do so much with so little. I know people who are using them as their desktops.
Oh, sure. Yeah, well, especially the Pi 5s. The processing power in them is just so much bigger now.
Right.
I've got a couple at home. Chris, a different co-host who comes and sits here periodically, gifted me a couple several years ago now.
Ooh, that's
a
good gift.
I've got one running Pi-hole. Pi-hole is a tool that keeps ads from showing up in my web browsing and also keeps all the requests out to ad networks to a minimum so that they don't necessarily learn all the things that they would prefer to learn about me in order to serve me even better ads, which I don't want to see in the first place. And then the other one I have is connected to my 3D printer, and its job is to run a little website that I can get to from anywhere else in my house or anywhere else that I care about, and supply that Raspberry Pi the files that my 3D printer needs in order to print new things for me. So while my printer and the Pi live down in the basement and are turned on, I can go to a website, log in as myself, upload a set of G-code, the instructions that my printer needs, and my Raspberry Pi dutifully, through USB, connects over to the printer, tells the printer to wake up, to warm up its bed, to warm up its heating element, and get started printing.
As long as you don't need a different color.
As long as I don't need a different color. I've just got the one color, so yeah. And then, it's really cool when you can... Right before you go to bed, say, okay, go get started. And then you wake up in the morning and you go down to the basement and poof, your object is right there on the print bed. It's like Santa Claus came and brought me something all throughout the year.
3D printing is way too much fun. Way too much fun.
So, yeah, Raspberry Pis, man, you can do just about anything with them.
With them. They're amazing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Greg from Fairport, New York. What's up, Greg?
Hi, gentlemen.
Hello.
I have renewed my membership today.
Thank you so much.
You've helped me a lot over the years. You might remember, Nick, that you proposed marriage to my wife years ago when online I mentioned that the battery on the motherboard of my 386 died and she was letting me, as a result, buy a Pentium.
Yep. I proposed to her on the spot.
Yes, you did. And she's let me buy a lot of fancy computers ever since.
You're a lucky man.
Well,
I am. I have a couple of real annoyances with the Chrome browser, which maybe I ought to just get rid of and use Firefox.
Okay, let's hear about them.
They're bothering me. I'm running Windows 10.
Okay.
And when I look at YouTube ads, it tells me I am running an ad blocker, and it's going to stop giving me, YouTube videos.
Oh.
It tells me I'm running an ad blocker, and it's going to stop serving me videos unless I get rid of the ad blocker. But I have no ad blocker installed. I have turned off all of my Chrome extensions. I have turned off the setting that says block ads on sites that show intrusive or misleading ads in Chrome. I have turned off the setting that says block pop-ups and redirects, and it's still doing it. Although if I go to YouTube through Firefox, I still get ads and no problems. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes. You're running Windows?
Yeah, Windows 10.
Do you have malware bytes?
I do.
Yeah, there you go. For some reason, YouTube thinks malware bytes is blocking your web ads.
Ah, okay.
Your choice is disable malware bytes, which I would not recommend,
mm-hmm.
or stop using Chrome. It does seem specific to Chrome, although there's also, you said you turned off all your extensions.
Yep.
And restarted Chrome.
Yep.
Okay, then the other things don't matter.
Is there an exclusion list you can set up in Malwarebytes?
I don't know, Mark.
Yes.
I'll have to look for it.
Yeah, you should be able to go into Malwarebytes and say,
ignore.
Well, but that's a problem.
Okay.
Right? Because one of the things Malwarebytes does is stop you from downloading bad stuff. So if you exclude the browser...
Well, you might be able to...
Just exclude YouTube?
Just exclude YouTube.com,
certainly, maybe? Certainly check that and see if that will work.
Okay, that's terrific. I'll do that. The other thing that I've got a problem is a memory leak. I've got a nice system with 32 gigs of RAM, and when I fire it up... I never turn it off.
Okay.
I'm always running Chrome with maybe, I have to admit, 15 tabs open, and Thunderbird and Spotify. And when I start up after a reboot, I've got a task manager says I'm using maybe 30% of my memory,
mm-hmm.
of 32 gig. That's fine. But the next day it's 37.
Okay.
And the next day it's 39. And the next day it's 50. And the next day it's 60. And after a couple, 3 weeks, it's 99. Blue screen of death.
Sure.
Yep. Okay, so we know for a fact that Spotify has a memory leak.
Oh, Spotify does.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is also likely that if you've got a lot of tabs open, Chrome is taking up massive amounts of your disk space.
Yeah.
The newest version of Chrome theoretically not disables, but puts to sleep
slims
tabs
it down
you're not using.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore... saves you a little bit of memory and a little bit of processor for each tab.
Right.
But we know for a fact that Spotify has a memory leak.
Yeah, you may need to close that tab.
Close Spotify
yeah.
and relaunch it. That'll probably help me a lot.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. That answers both of my questions. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's our...
Yeah, I know on a machine that I'm making use of, it has 16 gigs of RAM, but I'm also, throughout the day, I've got tabs open from all these sites that are like Gmail and Monday.com and other places that are actively trying to be apps inside a browser. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And those really require an awful lot more RAM than you'd think just for displaying a page. But it's the kind of thing where... the more you do that, the more the memory pressure goes up, and suddenly the machine is very unresponsive
yep.
because it's constantly paging things out to storage, which is so much slower. But keeping those down number of tabs down really helps.
On my old machine, I used to have to close down Chrome every once in a while.
Yeah.
Because it would just fill up memory.
Mm-hmm.
I've now got 32 gig.
Mm-hmm.
So I had closed down less often.
That's good.
But Chrome also does take up a lot of your memory. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug. From Holly, New York. What's up, Doug?
Good afternoon, guys. I have a question about my internet equipment.
Okay.
I'm getting a pitch from my provider to upgrade the modem.
Okay.
So I can take advantage of a faster speed.
All right.
My question is, how can I tell if my Synology router can handle that?
You look at the specs of the router itself. That really
right.
is the only way. If you can't find your manual, then get the name of the router from the router and look it up online.
Right.
Okay, really, that is the only way.
What specific characteristics would I be looking for on the router?
If they are talking about upgrading your speed, you need to check what speed your router will do. And that's the, 10 gigabits, 1 gigabit, whatever the throughput on your thing is.
Okay, so the, I'm trying to brand it now. Yeah, okay. Let's see. Okay, WAN port.
Mm-hmm.
That's the WAN model? Port is what comes into your router from the internet, and the LAN ports are what go out of your router to your other computers.
So the model number that you're looking for probably starts with RT.
Yeah, RT 2600 AC.
Okay. And what speed do you want to upgrade to?
Well, I've got their standard speed now, which is okay, but I figured, if I can, and without having to upgrade too much else, that'll give me the modem for no extra charge, which would increase the speed. I got a lot of Wi-Fi junk going on. My grandkids live here, and got a lot of Wi-Fi stuff going, so I figured if I can do this without having to upgrade a whole bunch of other things,
right,
then I'll do it.
Well, I'm taking a look at the webpage for the 2600 AC, mm-hmm. and looking at the hardware specs here, I see that it's got network ports, it's got wired ports. It doesn't give me a lot of information about the speed of them. My guess is that they're probably gigabit ports.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it does say, yep, gigabit times 4, gigabit times 3. So those are 1,000 megabit ports. So
whatever,
as long as you don't try and get more speed than that from your browser, from your provider, you should be fine. If you're trying to get faster than 1 gig speeds from your provider, then you'll want to have a faster router than this.
Okay, all right. Sounds good. Thank you, guys. Have a good afternoon.
Okay,
thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right, that music tells us that the first hour of this show is history. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of sound bites coming your way. That's a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour, luckily, of Dennis Worcester, a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco, a whole nother hour of Cheryl on the phones, and a whole nother hour of you. And we are in a pledge drive, so please, 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 log on to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button and make a pledge, or call Cheryl at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free 800-790-0415 for a good, to make that pledge, and we will see you in just a couple of minutes on more of Soundbites at 1 p.m.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester. And 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. I got to say, again, we are in the middle of a pledge drive. We're a little more than halfway home. So we would be delighted and thrilled and really, really happy.
If this could be the last Saturday.
If this could be our last Saturday. And the way that works is you folks need to step up. When we hit our goal, we stop begging, unlike some other places, but we stop. So if you want this pledge drive to end early, you know exactly what to do. Make the pledge. It's easy enough to do. You can do it online quite securely, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415, or you can call the lovely and talented Cheryl at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. And as I said at the top of the hour, generally during a pledge drive, the calls to this show drop off because people are too ashamed to say to Cheryl that they're not members. It's fine. We understand not everybody can afford to be a member. And we get that. So no shame. This is a no judgment zone.
And this, on the
at least about being
about
a member.
Membership, yeah.
Yeah. And this, on that same token, though, there is no wrong amount. You know, you've got to hit a certain level, you know, I mean,
before we'll talk to you.
Yeah, we've got, you know, the Jazz-O-Matic, if you can only, you know, do $10 a month, you know, automatically, you know, or if you can just do a one-time gift of a certain amount, there is no wrong amount. Each pledge gets us that much closer to ending this hard, you know, drive.
Every dollar counts.
Yep. Every dollar counts. Let's talk Jazz-O-Matic for a second.
Yeah, okay.
The Jazz-O-Matic system is, the way it works is you pledge a certain amount per month. We then automatically take that out of your checking account, having previously gotten permission.
Yep.
For 1 year and only 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you pledge at the $10 level.
Okay.
That's $120 for a year. Magically, that means you automatically qualify for the $120 level.
That's right.
Gifts.
Yes.
Yep.
And the $120 level this year.
What are those gifts?
Is the Hey Nice shirt level.
Nice.
So if you want one, you can get a Jazz 90.1 digital member card.
Okay.
You can get the Blacks Soundbite short sleeve T-shirt, which is stunning.
Amazing.
I must say. Or the Jazz 90.1 Soundbites Tumblr,
uh-huh,
which is a limited time offer.
Well,
and
that's what you want.
I have one, and it keeps my cold stuff cold and my hot stuff hot. How does it know?
I don't know.
It's magic, and it's beautiful. It comes with a plastic straw,
okay,
or you can drink right out of the cup.
Uh-huh.
It's really quite amazing, and I really love mine. And that's at the $120 Hey Nice shirt level. And so, you know, you could join at the $150 supporter level, the $365 a day level.
Okay.
With Jazz-O-Matic, the higher levels are a little bit more doable. You know,
yeah,
$120 is a big bite, and we get that.
Yeah. You can spread it out.
$10 a month is not as big a bite.
Yeah. Right.
So those of you who can afford it, and again, no shame. If you can't afford it, don't pledge. If you can afford $5, pledge it.
Yeah.
You know, we're happy with every amount you give, every single penny. But if you can do Jazz-O-Matic at a minimum of $10 a month, that is ideal for you and for us.
One other thing I'd like to, you know, put to rest for folks, as far as your data, you know, so quite often, you know, you're entering all this information, and the only reason we keep that information, and it's only for this drive, is to mail you a thank you.
Right.
After that, that data is destroyed. They don't want to keep your personal information, your credit cards, and anything else, you know, around to possibly get hacked or anything else. Your data is safe here. It's not sold off to, you know, other people to reuse, or the emails that you're all of a sudden going to get junk mail for this or that. No, it's just here to support this station. That's as far as it goes. No other, you know, mysterious stuff is going to happen to it.
Right. You get the Dave Enright guarantee on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. It's like I have that same argument with an ongoing argument with a guy about Ask Nick.
Yeah.
If you want to get my newsletter, you pay through PayPal, which you can use just a credit card or whatever. He said, well, I don't want to use PayPal. I want you to take my credit card number, some other means. No, I don't want your credit card
number. That's why you are using PayPal.
That's why I use PayPal. They have the credit card number, which they then don't care about anymore once they've got the money.
Yeah.
And that is the same with us. We do not keep your information. When you pledge to Cheryl, she does have to write it down, but it goes into a locked box, and then once it's entered into the system, it's destroyed.
Yep.
We don't keep your information.
Don't want to be responsible for it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
The liabilities
online,
of that.
If you pledge online, that number doesn't even get written down, right?
So I've lost my news. Where
your news? No news? This just in. He can't find his news.
It's just in. No news. Really? I've lost the news.
It can't have gone far. Well, you know what they say.
Is it on the floor?
No news.
Can you see it anywhere? I don't.
Where are the old pledges?
I bet they're under here.
Nope.
Weren't there more than we'll just those?
It. Maybe there's some others.
Aha!
This just in.
Oh, we never thanked Dee, our friend of the show, Dee. Has become a member. Thank you, Dee.
How embarrassing for us.
How many years has she been with us?
That's great. Thanks so much, Dee.
Dee and Larry, I mean, they have been around so long supporting this station. And when we were at other station.
More like Delightful.
Yeah.
She is Delightful.
Yeah. I mean, when Rob and I and you, Nick, we were over at other places, I mean, these folks, loyal listeners, have followed us around. And support us, and, you know, wish we could get more folks like that.
Right. All right. While you're making your pledge, which I'm sure that's what you're doing, I will read another news item. Oh, I've just blocked my camera. Hi. it's more Microsoft news, because we can't get enough.
Yeah. No, please.
Please.
Please,
Redmond. We can't get enough. Another
what
patch Tuesday, another bunch of 0 days, but just one this month. Which may be a record.
That's
also, out of 134 flaws fixed, only 11 were critical. For Microsoft, that's a
good
record.
Yeah.
But since this is there is a 0 day, which means it's already being exploited, you should update. However, Microsoft says some Windows users might be unable to log into their accounts via Windows Hello after installing the April 2025 security updates. They're calling it an edge case, but not saying how many users may be affected. If it happens to you, just set your PIN or Face ID up again. Theoretically, that'll work. You should know that the Windows April 2025 updates are strangely creating an empty iNet pub folder in the root of the C drive, even on systems that do not have Internet Information Systems, or ISS, installed. IIS, rather. IIS is a web server platform. It's essentially a web server created by Microsoft to host websites, web applications, and services on Windows systems. It is not installed by default, but can be enabled through the Windows Features dialog. IIS uses the iNet pub folder to store web content, logs, other server-related files. It's not normally created on systems without IIS installed. Microsoft has confirmed that this is part of a security update, and you should not delete it. But Microsoft still hasn't explained why the update creates this empty folder or why deleting it is bad. Speaking of security, after several cybersecurity-related delays, Microsoft is finally releasing its controversial recall feature for Copilot Plus PCs. Starting this past Thursday, Microsoft began gradually rolling out a preview of Recall, which records a user's activity by taking continuous screenshots of their computer screen. These screenshots then become searchable, letting users recall past activity. Experts called out hacker vulnerabilities. No, really? Made possible by recording a user's every move on their computer, with a former Microsoft cybersecurity analyst calling it a, and I quote, disaster. Early testers also discovered that Recall captures sensitive information like credit card and social security numbers, even though it's not supposed to. Recall can't be uninstalled, however, it can be disabled and users must explicitly opt into the feature. Copilot Plus PC users can also pause saving screenshots at any time. Microsoft has released an out-of-band Office update to fix a known issue that caused Word, Excel, and Outlook to crash after installing the KB 800-500-2700. Security update for Office 2016. And I know that many of you out there are indeed running a 9-year-old version of Office. Congratulations. There's an update.
You win. Yeah.
So are you ready for your computer to record every single thing you do? Give us a call, because I'm recording this too. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Do I have to put a disclaimer at the front of the show every week that says this show is being recorded? Certainly not for quality assurance purposes, but being recorded, and if you call in, your voice is recorded?
I don't know.
I think people know that by now.
I would think so, yeah.
We've only been doing it for 30-plus years.
Well, yeah, and I do know that they do use those things for training, but also if you decide that you want to behave very badly, they also keep that and make sure that, people know who that is, too.
I heard a story this week about someone I know who was on a support call with a customer, and the customer was just really belligerent and swore at them and called them a pretty dirty name. And then said, I want to speak to your supervisor. So my friend sent them to the supervisor. Supervisor gets on the line. The woman called her that same dirty name.
Mm-hmm.
And the supervisor just hung up.
Click.
And told my friend to hang up, too.
Right.
That's nobody deserves that.
Right.
Nobody should get it.
Their money isn't that green.
That's right. If you can't be polite, get off the line. Of course, now, I used to tell my kids this all the time. The students who worked for me when I was doing tech support, I told them, look, every single person you're talking to is at their worst right now.
Yep, they're having a bad day.
Because the only reason they're calling you is because they're having a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
So cut them some slack.
Yeah, to a point.
To a point. You know, if they're just snippy or disgusted.
Or getting personal, yeah.
If they're getting personal, then you shut them down and you call me.
Right.
But if they're just curt and grumpy and,
yes.
You know, that's just the way it's going to be because
they're mad about the situation. Right. They're mad about the situation, not the people that are trying to help.
Right. Nobody calls you and says, hey, come on over. My computer's working great.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, is just as a society, instant gratification has become the norm. And they want everything yesterday. And when you can't provide that or try to offer them some logical information on that, they don't want to hear it. They just continue talking about their displeasure that it's not being done instantly for them.
Right.
And like they're the only person in, say, that universe that's supposedly being dealt with.
Right. Now, And I have to say, let me preface this by saying, yes, here on this show, we almost always give you instant information. But that's because of two things. One, we've been doing this for far longer than is healthy.
Ooh.
And secondly, Google Foo.
Yep.
So we can find those answers while we're chatting. But those are software answers or conceptual answers.
Yep.
If you bring someone a computer, it may take days to fix because they've got to get the parts. We know what's happening with parts these days. They've got to put you in the queue. There are other people whose computers need fixing, and then they may run into an issue that they can solve, but not with a wave of a magic wand. So try to be a little understanding of the person on the other end of the phone.
Right.
And also, if someone says to you, we cannot do that, it's against the law, stop asking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's just the way that is. I did a test.
Okay.
Uh-oh. This week.
All right. Did you study?
I did not need to study.
Oh.
Apparently, Texas has all kinds of new laws about who can access pornography and how you have to.
I don't know where this is going.
You'll find out.
D-Brain.
And how you have to.
I think I hear my mother calling.
And I thought, are they really going to do this? And so they did it. And so
can you offer any amount of detail?
A couple, yeah. Well, right. They just, of course, Texas just said you can't do this.
Okay. What is the this?
So what
we can't
happened
do?
Is places like Pornhub have blocked Texas.
Oh, geographically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just completely blocked it, and I wanted to see the block.
Okay.
So I logged on to my browser with a VPN
right.
that sent me to Houston.
Okay, routed your connection,
routed my connection
yeah. from
Houston.
Rochester to
so
Houston
to
so that
a
any
site
websites.
That I almost never have gone to in my life, Pornhub.
Okay.
I do go look at the comments. They do a yearly, oh, and they, not comments, what do they call it? They do a yearly compilation of what states are looking at what
oh,
type
okay.
of porn, and I just
sure.
find that amusing. But I went, and there's this giant page of Texas, you know, your people have done this, and
yeah,
blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah,
yeah.
blah, blah,
statistics.
Blah, blah. Just a huge line, page of
okay.
verbiage, and I was just, I laughed and laughed and laughed. It amused me, and it made me happy.
So they've effectively done that.
They've
at
effectively
least.
Blocked Texas.
And they're probably doing that through GeoIP.
Exactly. You can. It is very easy to find the geographical location of the person who's
making
going
the request.
To the site.
Yeah.
And you can just make a list that says, if it's from Texas,
no dice.
It yeah. goes to this
right.
page where they can't get any farther.
A big red stop sign on it. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So I just wanted to see how well they'd implemented it.
But people in Texas could sit there and use a VPN
exactly
and say
right.
they're from Oklahoma.
It's exactly right.
Or wherever. Yeah, or anywhere that's not Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. congratulations, Texas.
And the way it worked, I'll tell you how exactly it worked. I was using Vivaldi.
Okay.
A Vivaldi
a browser.
Which has a free VPN, Proton VPN.
Okay.
And I logged into it just to see what that did, and it said, you're calling from Houston, Texas. At which point my brain went, I'm in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeehaw.
So I went and looked.
And
but
sure
yeah,
enough.
sure enough, there it is. But yeah, so yeah, that was just an amusing little thing that took a couple of minutes of my life this week.
That reminds me a lot of, you know, being in school where random arbitrary rules would come down for students and they'd say, well, yeah, you know, you're not allowed to do this anymore. And all the students would kind of look at each other and say, yeah, no, we don't do that. And by the way, if we wanted to get around this rule, we could in about 3 minutes anyway. So
exactly.
Who are you?
The real question
is, who's the audience for this rule? Is it the students or is it your peers or what is this? What is going on here? Because I just don't get it.
Right. The real question becomes who's really doing this in Texas? Is it a pandemic of porn watchers? You know, or
it's a political choice.
Well, it's political theater,
yeah. mm-hmm.
is what it is.
Right.
And that's all it is. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, who knows?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Previous caller, I wasn't paying close enough attention, and I know that'll go in my dossier.
Yeah.
But he was something to do with something he's doing with his church.
Okay.
And basically, I don't know that if this is an appropriate suggestion, but I think it is anyway. Churches and other nonprofits, you can get Google Workspace for free.
Right,
if you
yes.
are a 501c3. And it has everything that you're used to with regular Google plus a mountain of stuff.
Yep.
And there's
sure.
Depending on what you want to do, there's a little bit to learn about administering it. You have to have somebody that's your IT guy. Terrible job.
But,
yeah, thought I would throw that out for anybody that's in that area of trying
that's
to figure out
how to do things.
That's a great
point. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, Google yeah. Workspace costs money, and I forget what the amount is, but you pay per user.
Yeah.
And for a business, it's not a lot of money.
It's on the order of, like, tens of dollars a month. It's
yeah,
not
yeah, yeah. It's not a lot. But for a not-for-profit, that's a lot of money.
It is.
And so,
right.
God bless Google. For a not-for-profit, Google Workspace is free. You get Google Meet. You get all the Google stuff, right?
Right.
You get email. You get Gmail. You get
right.
your Google Drive. But you also get extended Google Meet meetings
mm-hmm.
and a couple of other things that you may not care about but are there. And it's a great thing. And you know, if you're not for profit, it's free.
Yeah, and Google Docs and Google Sheets and Google Forms and all the stuff, photos. Yeah.
And you can more easily share documents among the people in that group.
Right. And shared calendars.
Calendars, right.
Big thing for scheduling.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, it's a great idea. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, there's actually, I could go on all day about all the different stuff, but it's very, very useful. So I have a question. You know, in fact, this is the same thing, the nonprofit that I do this with. You know, we have a Zoom session going, and at the same time, I'm streaming to YouTube.
Okay.
Which is also included free with the workspace. Anyway, I'm looking for an application for Windows that it will actually monitor the real-time bandwidth that I'm consuming.
Yeah.
I'm seeing jitter that shows up in the YouTube video, and it's not there in Zoom. So I'm presuming that what's happening is I'm just right on the edge of how much my computer and the wireless connection to the modem, and blah, blah, blah. So I thought I'd start with let's see how much bandwidth I'm using.
Okay.
So I was hoping to find an app for that.
There is a...
Well, Task Manager will have some amount of that.
Yeah, there is a built-in resource monitor.
Yes, resource monitor.
So you can start there.
And it's actually pretty detailed in the more modern versions of Windows.
Yeah.
Right. I would start there.
I know about that, and I didn't even think to look there.
Yeah. That's the best place. If you want a third-party tool, there's one called Networks with an X, another called Bandwidth Monitor. That's there. But start with Resource Monitor. It's right there on your machine already. You're running Windows, right?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Resource Monitor is right there. And the jitter may not be you, okay?
Well, right.
Right, but this will tell you, this will at least give you a start of a clue.
Yeah, I was looking at some older stuff that was on YouTube, and there was almost imperceptible amount of jitter, and the amount that's showing up now is there. It's not real bad or anything, but for the thing about nonprofits. Google Workspace, you also get a free website.
Right.
And it's not the most sophisticated, but if you're a small organization.
And all you need, it's essentially brochureware.
Right. Yeah. And even if you have your domain, if you have your own domain name, that's your email name.
Right.
So.
Before you go, there's also a speed test. At Ookla, OOKLA, right?
Yep, right.
If you take that test, it will tell you what your jitter is.
Maybe. Yeah, come to think of it.
Yeah, it will.
I was hoping to avoid that while I'm actually in a session because I got to start.
No, I understand that, but ahead of time, you can at least see what the general jitter is.
Right. I was going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okie doke. Thanks.
Have a good one.
All right. Thank you for calling.
You too. Have fun. There's jitter for those of you who don't know is just it's literally that in your internet connection.
Right.
It does a little stutter, and generally you don't notice it.
Yeah.
If you're doing video. You may notice it. I was doing a session with somebody once, and at the time I was in gigabit Ethernet, and he kept freezing, and he kept blaming me.
Of course.
Said, I don't think so. I don't think it's me. I'm on gigabit Ethernet. What are you on? Oh, I'm using my phone.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Okay. Maybe it isn't me.
So the AI overview in Google says that network jitter refers to the variation or irregularity in the arrival time of data packets across a network. This means packets may arrive at their destination at different speeds or times, even though they were sent at the same time. This inconsistency can lead to problems in real-time applications, like video calls and online gaming, where a steady and predictable flow of data is crucial.
But that's what UTP anyway, right?
Well, VoIP calls are typically TCP.
Right. I have a UTP joke, but you might not get it.
Yeah, no.
And I don't care if you do. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's a pledge drive. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And I'm just reminding you, we're in a pledge drive. So please, 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 please head on over to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and make a pledge. Or, alternately, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl. She will also pass you on to us whether or not you have made a pledge.
It's true.
We don't judge. This is the no judgment zone.
No pledge necessary, but we sure do appreciate it.
We sure do.
Oh, before you go, I passed one of my bad habits onto some of my employees at work as far as tabs.
I don't know where this is going either.
Stop it!
But they're finding out it makes so much sense.
They better have 8 gig of RAM at minimum on those machines.
Well, ours... We're just basically dumb terminals because, you know, we all connect to the back server. For what we do in my area, you know, it's constantly, you know, trying to open up other tabs and all that other stuff. And I showed them, well, you know, if you line these tabs up, and they didn't know that you could move them around. They thought just because you opened up, say, this one particular program, it was over here, and then you're opening up some more. But you really wanted that first one over, you know, to the right.
Yeah.
They didn't know you could click and drag.
Yeah. My favorite thing it's not just Chrome, but Chrome is what I use. My favorite thing about Chrome is on the far left, there's a little down arrow next to the tabs.
Yep.
And when you click it, it lists all the tabs that are open, and you can search.
Yep.
So when I'm doing the news, I often have 50 tabs open for the news, and then I close them all.
Right, yeah.
But I want to be able to go back and forth and say, where was the one about this? Where was the one about that? Instead of searching through 50 tabs, I just pull down the arrow type or Control-Shift-A and type my query, and it brings up the, you know, I'm looking for Microsoft, which there would be a lot of those, but you get the idea. And it brings up whatever title is at the top of that pit tab right now.
Well, they found out, you know, they saw what I was doing because on the average, I've got 12 tabs open. And
that's very little for you. Congratulations.
It is, really. Yeah. But it's making it so we can do our job more efficiently.
Right.
And given the customer that comes up to us and what task we have to do with them. And, you know, they didn't realize it because before some of them were open, just say one tab doing this and then have to do it again and then do it again. Like, no, just put them all up there and it makes you more efficient for you.
And the other thing is if you use the same set of tabs every day, you can save them as a tab set.
Yeah, and that's what I do. And
then just open the tab set and they're all there again.
And they go, how'd you do that? And I showed them and it was cool. So now I go.
It's FM.
Yeah.
Fantastic magic.
Yeah.
All right. Google News. If you have an Android phone, there's an update headed your way. Google has shipped patches for 62 vulnerabilities, two of which it is said to have been exploited in the wild. The most severe of these issues is a critical security vulnerability in the system component that could lead to remote escalation of privilege Execution privileges needed. User interaction is not needed for the exploit, so keep an eye out for this update. As usual, Google puts these out in an extended rollout, so you may not see it immediately. And of course, you may think to yourself, what can they get on my phone? Well, everything. You keep everything on your phone now. Google parent Alphabet reportedly slashed hundreds of jobs in the division responsible for Android and its Chrome web browser. It's part of its latest restructuring. The layoffs hit Google's platforms and devices division, which also includes employees working on Google Photos and other hardware like the Pixel, Fitbit, and Nest products. Google has been restructuring as it pours more resources into the AI race. Oh, please. The exact number of impacted workers was not immediately clear. If you're a user of Google Workspace, Gemini can now create an audio overview of your document so that you can listen to an AI critique of your document. How fun.
Yay.
If you're speaking of Gemini, a useful Gemini feature that Google first rolled out a few months ago, exclusive to a few phones, is now available for free users on a much wider scale. Select Samsung phones are also getting access to Gemini Live's. Pixel people are apparently all getting it. And select Samsung phones are also getting access to Gemini Live's multimodal capabilities, allowing users to point at objects with their phone camera and ask Gemini about them. I pointed my phone at Dave, and it rebooted. Talk Live About is a feature that lets you show Gemini what's on your screen and have a conversation about it. It works for files, images, and YouTube videos. You can also ask for a summary of a document for help identifying something in a photo, for specific details in a file, for the context of a YouTube video, and more. So are you ready for in-depth chats about your phone? How about with us? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. AI is getting to be everywhere. Google just introduced a new AI chip that is supposed to be the greatest thing since laser sliced bread.
Right. And then NVIDIA was doing something similar.
So it's, you know, everybody's, the problem with AI is that it is incredibly power hungry. It uses lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of power.
Right. Computationally intensive.
Right.
I would say.
Yeah. Computationally intensive. Which translates to huge amounts of power, and the grid is getting a little creaky, in some places. So that's why there are vast wind farms owned by Google and Apple and Microsoft.
And Microsoft was considering firing up Three Mile Island again.
Three Mile Island, which gives them...
they've since walked back from that, but...
Yeah, but it would have given them... Well, I don't know if Three Mile Island is the visuals you want to be associated with Microsoft.
Right.
But the concept of nuclear energy to power your stuff...
Yeah.
Is not a bad one.
No, tremendously efficient.
And solar wind farms, solar farms, and all of that stuff. So they're now talking about putting data stuff in space and on the moon. So that the problem with the moon, of course, is the almost 3-second lag.
Right.
Between your request and a response.
Yeah. If you thought Amazon Glacier was slow, this is not even the same planet.
Right. Exactly. Literally.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, there's a, even in orbit, it's a 1 or 1.5 second delay, but nearly 3 seconds to go to the moon and back. And that's at light speed. Those are some distances, people. Well, you all right?
He's fine.
Mm-hmm.
He's still upright.
Yeah.
Enright is upright. That's good.
Enright is upright.
No, I was just thinking. Yeah, I know it causes headaches sometimes. Frank Glover had sent me, you know, a link, which I forgot to write it down. But for any of the folks that talking about the space,
yeah,
there is an astronaut right now on the space station.
Yep.
Okay.
That is doing talks every so often on ham radio.
Oh, nice.
And people can tune into it. I'll have to write that.
And by on ham radio, you mean
via.
Actually via ham radio.
Yeah. And folks will sit there, I don't have one. Well, there are other ways, which I'm going to get all this information together, that you can do on your computer. You can do what they call an SDR. And it's software-defined radio. that you can then pull up and tune into it and hear it. You're not going to hear it at all. You know, she's not going all day long. There's other times that she's on, and you just got to sort of have it sitting there listening in the background.
Yeah. Some pretty amazing stuff. And ham radio, it's only been around since Nikola Tesla.
Yep.
So, you know, it's a well-established medium, and
it's big into schools in there, especially with the space station right now. It's causing kids to really get into more of the sciences and discovery of what they're doing up there, because, you know, they're just not up there just floating around. They're conducting experiments on all different types of stuff. I mean, heck, simple thing like Velcro became from space, along with other things, you know.
Teflon.
Yeah, Teflon. I mean, a lot of great products and other foods and cures have been discovered up there growing up in space.
Right.
And, you know, these kids, what better way to turn them into scientists and expand their minds and get them thinking than, you know, talking to astronauts and everything else and asking questions and getting them to explore other areas.
Right. Now, and for those of you who are about to frantically call in, when Dave said that Velcro came from space, he means it came through the NASA space program.
Necessity.
Not it showed up on Earth on a from strange visitor from another planet.
Or duct tape.
Or duct tape. So, yeah, there's the stuff we have gotten from the space program. It's pretty massive.
Yeah.
And
it created a necessity, and they found a solution to it. It's the best way to put it.
Yeah. Friend of mine's father invented the V-shaped planter, where you can fill a reservoir at the bottom of a planter. You put the V-shaped plants in, and it soaks it up, so you don't have to water them every day.
Oh, okay.
And his wife said, we're going out of town for the winter or whatever, for a month or so, and I don't want my plants to die. What can you do? And he came up with this. So he always said, mother is the necessity for invention.
Yeah.
And we have another pledge has come in. Thank you, the lovely and talented Cheryl.
There she is.
Has brought that in, and we would like to thank Sherry for her generous donation. Thank you so much, Sherry. We very much appreciate it. As we've been saying, every dollar helps, and your dollars are needed right now. There are multiple levels in which you can, or at which you can pledge, and you can see them all on our website at jazz901.org. Hit that big red donate now button. Or, of course, you can call, as I said, the lovely and talented Cheryl at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. So, for example, we've talked about this already, the $120 Hey Nice Shirt level. There is also the $150 supporter level, just another $30. You as your benefit, you get the digital member card, and boy, is that a benefit.
That is a great deal right there.
And you can also get the Sound Bites full zip fleece. I love mine.
Mm-hmm.
I love mine. It's only $150, and you can do that through Jazz-O-Matic. And that's, what did I just click on? Oh, I didn't want to click on that. Thank you very much. Go away now. So you can do it for $150, and at 12 months, that's just $12.50 a month. And $12.50 a month! You can afford that.
But that food cart, you know, I mean, it's more than food. It's to wineries and everything else.
Oh, the Jazz 90.1 card, yeah.
You know, if you want to go out and have a decent evening, you can take advantage of some of those deals that are on there. You know, sometimes some of them, I think, are still 2-for-1 or that. And right now, with food prices going up, what better way to save money?
I'll tell you what. We don't go out very often right now for various reasons. But when we do, I bring my Jazz 90.1 card.
Yeah.
We have saved what we...
Yeah, you come out ahead.
We come out ahead.
Yeah.
You know, the money that we donated to the station, we've made back more than that in free meals. The membership card, I think it's supposed to be illegal. It's just too much.
It's too good a deal.
It's too much. But you can get one at most of the levels. So check the levels to see where you... I think it starts at the $90. Yeah.
It starts
at the $100 level.
And that list keeps growing, though. Rob is constantly adding to that list of available restaurants and things to do constantly.
Yeah.
You know... We always advise folks periodically, you can go to the site, the Jazz 90.1 website, and look at the full list, because that's constantly being updated versus maybe the brochure that you might have gotten with the card that's sent to you.
Right.
Because, like I say, yeah, new businesses are opening up, and they're out there trying to add to it.
For those of you looking for it on the website, jazz901.org. In the support Jazz 90.1 menu is the Jazz 90.1 member card. And it's pretty amazing what you can get and what you can do. There's a list of local benefits. Also, by the way, you can go to them and say, I'm going to spend 2 weeks in Florida. And they will say, fine, we're activating your card for Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous.
So you can go to Florida place. Well, whatever state. I mean, obviously, anywhere pretty much.
Yeah.
But you can now, it's not just, you know, you normally see local benefits, okay, because they assume you're doing like day trips.
Right.
But if you say, I'm going to spend a couple of weeks in Tucson, they'll activate your card for Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have local Tucson events you can do.
Yep.
It's pretty amazing and pretty nice. I don't know if it's still part of it, because I'm not going to go through the nonsense to look for it right now, because it's not my local area. But when my daughter was in college in Tucson, she did Saturdays at a museum. And she said a number of people came in and just showed their membership card to get in.
Yeah.
And it was, she said, I have one of those. It was kind of amusing to her. It's possible that I believe it's also Canada. Don't hold me to that. But it certainly is pretty much every place in the U.S. And there's a lot of places you can, if you look through that list, and you don't find one thing that sparks you a little bit,
you're hurting for sure.
You're hurting for sure. So check it out, the membership card. You can find your local benefits through that. And they have multiple, the number of benefits, you know, there's dining, there's travel, there's arts and entertainment. Do you like to take in shows? Use your card. A bunch of online stuff, sports stuff, health stuff. Wellness, shopping, services. I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if you can't find something, call up a heart specialist immediately, because yours isn't beating. But that's the thing with that. And you can become a member really easily. All you have to do is head on over to jazz901.org, click that Donate Now button, donate at the $120 level the $100 level or above. I'll learn it just in time for the pledge drive to be over. The $100 level or above, and you can get your member card.
And that's just one of the benefits, along with the other gifts that he includes. You know, I mean, there's CDs and clothing and quite a bit of...
I don't understand why there isn't a human being on the planet who hasn't got a Soundbites logoed product. Dave made that logo, 100 years ago? Thereabouts, and it's still a wonderful logo, and it's on all of our merch.
Yeah,
and you could be a proud member of Soundbites and wear your merch.
That's at least 32 years old. Because it was shortly after I joined the show that I did that. I took me about 2 months doing that up in the old Corel drawing program.
Oh, yeah, Corel. Wow.
Yeah, and...
Wow.
Yeah, Sandy, who was working with Corel, the company at the time, was the one that set me up with the product and helped me along with designing it and that and made different suggestions and that. And, it took me about 2 months, but, yeah, that's about 32 years...
Well, it was
32.
Time well spent.
Yeah.
And you can... I went to lunch with an old friend the other day. I had my Soundbites jacket and my Jazz 90.1 hat on. He had a Jazz 90.1 shirt. The waitress looked at us like we must be in a cult.
You're from the radio station?
Yeah, right. But you could be proudly a member of our cult, and it's easy enough to do. Head on over to Jazz 90. I'm just going to pound this until people call. Head on over to the Jazz 90.1 website. Hit that big red donate now button or call us at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Talk to the lovely and talented Cheryl. And even if you don't make a pledge, she will pass you through on to us. I want to talk about my Raspberry Pis for a minute.
Okay.
One of the Raspberry Pis I love the most is the Pi 400.
Okay.
And the Pi 400
is a special model, right?
What?
It was a special model in a case.
No, yeah, but you can get one today. It's not special. They sell it. And it's a Pi 4, essentially,
right?
But inside a keyboard.
Right. That's what I meant. That's the special part.
So you get the keyboard. All you have to do is hook up a mouse and a monitor if you want one, and it will work. And I do what you do, Dave. I boot it off a hard drive.
Yeah, that's
mine's only 512 gig, half a terabyte. But I love it, and I can't wait for the 500.
Mm-hmm.
I deeply, desperately want a Pi 5, but what I really want is a Pi 500.
Okay.
So you have the all-in-one, the keyboard. It's right there for you, and I can attach a monitor and a mouse to it, and Lord knows I've got a couple of monitors and a few mice sitting around. That's
right.
Not a problem. I seem to kill keyboards, but that's a different story. You set it up and you're done. You set it up and you're done. Whether you're running Windows or Linux, you're done. And it's there every day, and it works perfectly every single day. And it's the 4... The 400 is passively cooled, which means it's just a heat sink, but it never gets warm. It never gets warm.
Right.
Remember when I back a couple of months ago, I was playing with Bitcoin. I was playing with Monero.
Okay.
And I was mining it on that machine. Never got above 41 degrees Celsius.
Hmm. Incredible.
I stopped doing that because it was silly, and it's down to 39 degrees. So it really wasn't. Much.
Yeah, not a lot of overhead there.
It works great for whoever called in trying to put one in their church. You clearly don't need a 400.
Yeah, Larry.
Right, that was Larry. You don't need the keyboard. If you want to get it with the keyboard, then the keyboard is there. You're done. It's that easy. But I would suggest that in general, if you're looking to play, you really don't need more than a 4 gig machine.
Mm-hmm.
But 8 gig is certainly going to
gives you more options later on.
Spread your wings. All right, that music tells us that we are done with this show for another week, but we are not done with the pledge drive. That doesn't happen until we hit $70,000, and the only way we do that is for you to make the call and make the pledge. Head on to jazz901.org, hit that big red donate now button, and make the pledge. You can call during the week, but make that pledge online. You're all computer geeks. Just do it. I want to thank Dave Enright. I especially want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Happy to do it.
And I especially want to thank Dennis Worcester's family. for releasing him for a few hours. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?